relation to the other, how we develop the qualities of, or the desire to learn, how we wrap our sari, how we wear our beads. So many rules and regulations are there. And I was reminded immediately of a story Srila Prabhupada told us when he was young, that he would sit at the table with his family, and his mother would eat with her left hand. And she did this for a very, very long time. And finally, when Srila Prabhupada got to 4 or 5 years old, he looked at her and said, "Why are you eating with your left hand?" And she said, "I was just waiting for my son to become intelligent enough to notice that I was eating with the wrong hand and ask me." So when I was thinking of that, I thought, this is what the rules of etiquette are like, that at the point that you have enough bhakti in your heart, enough seriousness, that you want to find out why we do things in the way we do more, then that will impel you rather than just the presentation of rules and regulations from us. If it comes from you, I mean, we can lay basic things out, but the more you want to learn this, the more you're going to imbibe it in your heart and keep it. So we want to start with simple things, the simple basic etiquette of Vaishnav behaviors and Vaishnav, how we act as Vaishnavas. And so Jamuna will start. Jamuna had an amazing amount of association in this regard, because when we talked about this originally, I said, so maybe you can speak about Prabhupada and etiquette. Examples you saw of Prabhupada and etiquette. And Jamuna said something very amazing. She said, Srila Prabhupada lived etiquette in every moment of every breath of every day of his life. That was Srila Prabhupada. But she fortunately got to experience so much of that, so many aspects of that. And so I wanted her to speak a little bit about this. And then we want to open it up for discussion, things that you want to talk about, things that you want to improve on, ways that you want to understand the etiquette of the basic things that we do in Krishna consciousness.
Happy birthday, Rob.
Happy birthday.
Hare Krishna. Sri Radha Kunda Ki
Jai.
Hare Krishna. First, I'd like to see the Tenberry. You know, very happy in my heart to have each one of your company. That everyone that's in this room is very treasured to Dina and I. And that Kara and Radha are facilitating this couldn't make us happier, because we feel that Govardhan Academy is perhaps the most special gem in Sharanagati at the moment. Because it's a place where you're not only learning what you have to learn to get a piece of paper to say you went to high school, but more than anything, you're having the opportunity to have the sangha of the best that there is in terms of teachers right now. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that Shani Kishore and his good boy, Sangita, join, and those others that are destined to do that in some way. But when Kar started this program in Alachua, I had the good fortune to go, I think it was 2002 or 2003. And I was so enlivened. He had a group of many, many young people that just 100% were hungry, hungry, hungry for accessing Krishna consciousness in a very honest and very alive and hungry way. And it manifested through everything that was there, the worship of the deities, the kirtans, the quality of the questions and the answers, the dedication to the process of sangha, and to the distribution of prasadam. So it was really a format for exchanging the 6 loving exchanges that we call the essence of Krishna consciousness in one little package. And were we to have those on a broader scope within our society, we would be a different society. So this is some facility that Kar and Radha have become enlivened with, a formula that really works. It produces results very definitely And the first time I was asked to speak, I spoke on the subject of commitment to the process of Krishna consciousness. And when Dina and I wandered through the labyrinth of the word etiquette, what came to me first in accessing etiquette is beliefs. Beliefs comes before commitment. So we are given so much information on what is Vaishnava life, what is Vaishnava lifestyle, what is Vaishnava goal, what is Vaishnava practice, what is Vaishnava Siddhanta, what is Vaishnava everything. But our brain goes in one side through this hearing process, and then sometimes it sits inside the brain, sometimes it ran out the other side, sometimes it gets locked in a little drawer. You know, we're able to access the drawer when we really think about a subject matter, when we hear about it, and when we hunger to understand it. So when we hear about rules of etiquette, at first they're words, concepts. But as we do what? As we chant the holy name. Holy name in this age is our access point for eagerness, lolyala, and Krishna consciousness. The more we chant, and the more we try to chant with sincerity, integrity, intent, and focus, four things. The more we chant, the more we get the desire to understand that the beliefs that we're hearing are ways, are channels, are roads to getting to Krishna consciousness. To absorbing our minds, our senses, and our intelligence in Krishna consciousness. So, I would like to ask you what you even perceive as important in the way of etiquette. We're spontaneous, this is a small group, so we'll just go around the room starting with Manmohan Prabhu. What is it about etiquette that fascinates you, that you don't understand, that you want to know more about? What is it?
Compassion.
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 Okay.
Shannon. It's fascinating that Vaishnavas, there's two sides. There's a side that's inconceivable, that is beyond what we can understand in that mundane human intellect. And there's also a side that's constantly coming between all elements of Krishna etiquette. So, to be able to appreciate the uniqueness of Vaishnava and also have commonality in the ways we deal with each other.
That's
important. An extremely important aspect of etiquette is that it preserves culture. And conveys culture and upholds culture.
At this point, I'm interested in finding, as I was saying this morning, what motivates you to obey etiquette,
to want to do it.
Because I was raised in a Gaudiya mutt, and sometimes it was explained initially. Other times I didn't understand why I was doing something. And it became ritual. And in India, a lot of things are
ritual. Yeah, ritual. Very good. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Think of that etiquette.
I like going to Nagpur and seeing the deities when the chief woman is going live and seeing the video.
Yes. Okay.
I was just appreciating how you were saying before that how respect is a huge part of etiquette. And I was thinking how this beautiful thing about etiquette is kind of fosters humility in a way that is sometimes not easily accessible to other people.
Service.
Yes. How do you end the service to the Vaishnavas and how do you end the service to etiquette?
Yes.
I think that when we'll behave properly, it creates a greater sense of peacefulness in society, in the interactions that they have, subordinates with superiors, and vice versa. And I think that's it.
Knowledge that they know, and we really have a lot of things in it too. For me, I look at loss of humility. I think that I should like it, and I don't really know anything about it. But I know I think it should be pretty, like, thought out in humility, in a humble way. And I know that I really want to know as much as I can, because loss of hope, I want to learn. Well, I'm sure we don't know much about etiquette, considering we're raised here where everyone's so familiar with each other, so we don't practice etiquette as much as other people do.
It's true in this place.
So, half the things of the kind of etiquette you're describing, I'm like, oh, what's that? I don't know. So I feel like learning is really important, considering, like, if we go somewhere, etiquette's really important to know in other places, and also how to do this thing. Service, I feel, is very important part of etiquette. Serving senior devotees, serving elders. And yeah, I want to learn a lot of it. Etiquette, so.
Etiquette's definitely very important, and I feel like I don't know very much about it. But since you're saying so, how Prabhupada just lived etiquette every moment, that makes me eager to learn more about it. Especially since this next generation, you can see there's many examples of not proper etiquette. So that makes me even more anxious to try to set an example, like, for myself.
Now, this is one of the things that I wanted personally to bring forward to you, that you have real significant challenges in your generation, how to preserve, how to carry forward what Srila Prabhupada gave us, because if we don't teach you, if we don't teach you what we've learned regarding these things from Srila Prabhupada, you won't know them to pass on, which is what you will also have to do. So many of your generation, we've been negligent in just not passing on what Srila Prabhupada gave us in terms of Vaishnava etiquette. Or passing on in a limited way, or in a way that doesn't emphasize its importance in terms of the passing on of the culture of Krishna consciousness. So you have that big challenge. So it means that you have to have within your heart more of a desire to learn, more of a desire to try to imbibe what we have in a nice, balanced way.
Thank you for all of your comments. Each one was important, and each one it would be nice to be able to have the time to address. It'd be great if every Sunday for a month we could take a topic and have this kind of thing where people bring out that aspect that they would like to more understand or explore, and have group discussions on what it means, and be able to hear from others their realizations, as well as figure out ways to apply them in our daily lives. But to go back to the core example of Srila Prabhupada and a little bit about the history of etiquette in ISKCON as opposed to Gaudiya Math, where Gaudiya Math was established with Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple, first trained by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, and then many, 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 many years of training in these different temples. But we know the history of Srila Prabhupada, someone who came home totally alone in the United States on the Jaladutta ship. And everyone's read the Jaladutta diaries, right? You see what his prayers are like in that boat. I think we have no idea what was going to happen to them in this sojourn of Coin to the Western world. And when he came and established his first temple, I had a strange vision. My sister was the first wedding after just a few days after the first initiation. And I saw the group of ragtag transcendentalists that he had amassed at that point, and who seen Happiness on 22nd Avenue film? That's everybody? Oh, you have to watch that. You gotta get a bowl of popcorn and watch that. It's just, it's so humorous.
Well, it's on the first DVD,
the Acharya series or something. You know, just really young hippies thinking that after a week they were Krishna conscious. Really fun. So Srila Prabhupada started this International Society for Krishna Consciousness not with a lot of rules. What were the first four things he gave us to do? Four prohibitives and one positive. The chant was one. And what were the other four things? Four rules. Eating? No. Olives? Sex life? No. Gambling? And no intoxication. Those are the four things he said to do. And to add to that, the positives were chant Hare Krishna, dance, and feast. Chant, dance, and feast. Those were the... Can you imagine that? That's etiquette. That's a circa 1966 etiquette of Krishna consciousness. On November 25th, he posted 10 things on the wall, which I didn't bring. All of you within Bhavani Mihari Mandir have read those 10 things on the wall. Were the standards of etiquette for ISKCON. And when Bhakti, in the beginning of the book Amrita Vani, there are 108 principles of etiquette that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta established for his Gaudiya institutions, of which a good part of them are very deep, deep philosophical concepts. So that's how Prabhupada started ISKCON. In the very beginning, as Dina mentioned, tell you the story that, as he mentioned the story Rabba told me about his mother, and eating with his left hand, with her left hand. In San Francisco, our second temple, the first temple in New York only had boys in it, before Jadavani came. Kaniki was the only girl. And in our San Francisco temple, we had a mix of half girls and half boys in our temple. And Prabhupada, we had a little storefront like New York temple, and he gave these rules and regulations. Prabhupada arrived the 14th of January. At the beginning of February was the first initiation, Shyamchandra Mall. And Shyamchandra at that time was smoking cigarettes. So he had this addiction. He was having trouble stopping cigarette addiction. So outside of our temple, we had a dog hitching post for the devotees that had dogs that came to the temple with their dogs and to registry. And then after the program, the devotees would go out and smoke cigarettes in front of the temple. So Srila Prabhupada had it in San Francisco, they have these carved bay windows, and they're windows that stick out a little bit over a building. He was up on the second floor, and he could look down to the entrance of our temple building. And I was sitting there one day, and he turned around, and he had big cow eyes, very soft, gentle eyes, passionate. And he said, "When will I stop this cigarette smoking? How long will it take?" So he was the same mood as him with his mother. Mm-hmm. He knew he couldn't force us. He was coming from such a low place. But he just wanted so much for us to get it, that if we engage in these four things, we're just wasting time from Krishna. So the bottom line, I think, over those 11 years that we spent with Srila Prabhupada, was to understand that etiquette, of course, Sanatana Goswami's statement is there, that etiquette is what? For the devotee? The morning. Exactly. the ornament of the devotee. Some have said it's like a garland of beautiful ornaments that's worn by the devotee. So the more we polish these ornaments, the more we treasure these ornaments, the more they become valuable to us. Just like when we have something special, we put it in a special place, externally and internally. In our hearts, we put it in a special place, and externally we keep it in a nice place. So these beautiful teachings or nuggets or jewels of wisdom that are in fact etiquette are there always for a purpose, but more they're the vehicles for accessing more chanting of the Holy Name, more pure chanting of the Holy Name. Last year was such an important year for me. I'm contemplating the concept of purity. And we were just listening to a very interesting lecture on the internet with this young girl who was giving a very fascinating talk about purity, especially through the chanting of the Holy Name. He seemed to focus a huge part of his adult life on the idea of chanting without offense and chanting purely and chanting deeply. So Srila Prabhupada explained in the time that he was with us how deeply important it was to chant, to access the deity worship. Jiva Goswami said that deity worship is accessed through the chanting of the Holy Name. So maybe Carl will want to go on and explore these things so that you can have dialogues with each other as to what you'd like to focus on in first and foremost in simple ways in the next year in terms of understanding etiquette. Because it's so big, it's such a vast subject matter. And you've already imbibed a lot of it, but now to put it into practice and make it important in your lives is probably the next step for etiquette.
Yes. The Chaitanya Charitamrita says that etiquette, that a devotee manifests etiquette through the development of the 26 qualities of a devotee. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking how Sanatana Goswami, who wrote the book on etiquette called Hari Bhakti Vilas, how he so much embodied these 26 qualities of a devotee that are just exemplary. For instance, the quality of humility. The quality of humility is an etiquette because our nature is to always want to push ourselves forward. But when a devotee develops real humility, you often find him in the back, you know, not pushing himself forward. And that's and Sanatana Goswami did that as an etiquette. And I'll give you an example. That he would not go into the temple of Lord Jagannath along with Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami, because he felt that even though he was born in a high Brahmin family, he had associated with Muslims and therefore he didn't feel himself qualified. And so often in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll hear Lord Chaitanya see him off in the distance. So that's him. Who is that? Bring him forward. Or if he had sores on his body, he wouldn't let Lord Chaitanya near him. So he manifested humility in such a great degree, and that was the ornament of his Vaishnava etiquette. So as we develop, if we can develop qualities and modes of goodness in our hearts, they will percolate out, and that will be the etiquette. The ornament of our Vaishnava etiquette towards each other. And it's a wonderful way to start, because from that to really learn etiquette, it's a wonderful way to start, because that way, as qualities become stronger, our faith increases, our desire to chant more, to serve more, all of these things come out. And therefore, they actually give impetus to all of these things. They give wonderful impetus. So we really wanted to open it up that any of you ask or say that you would like to discuss any aspect of something you feel that we can work on, that we can grow with,
that we can take with us in a way that will move us forward in terms of Vaishnava etiquette. Any of you young people?
I would really like to learn how to dress properly and how to just behave with others, with elders.
Yeah. Those are really, really important things.
This morning, Bhumangal Archidina and I were discussing this, and we were thinking of the example in terms of dress, that when we're in public especially, if you think of the Amish, say, even the Buddhists, you don't see a Buddhist monk with long hair and a ponytail, a guy. And you don't see him in Levi's and Bermudas. Mm-hmm. And you don't see the Amish women dressed in their aprons and kerchiefs and the guys in some other outfit. They have a dress that when you see them, you know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So Vaishnava's Prabhupada would say, number one for dress, what was the very first and most important thing for Vaishnava in dress?
Tila.
Mm-hmm. Tila, exactly. There was a statement Prabhupada made to me once, he said, when I came into a room, and I wasn't to hot and sweaty yet, and the tilak was nice, Prabhupada just went, oh.
Beautiful
tila. He really let me know he liked that tila. And then he looked over at somebody else's whose tila wasn't so nice.
Have any of you seen the video of Srila Prabhupada putting on tila?
No, I didn't watch it.
Oh, you have to watch that.
Oh, meditation.
It was a total meditation and an art form. He always had his pinky. I can't do my arm.
And he had his little tilak case.
Yeah, a beautiful case. And he would put it on, and we reached the top, and he'd go. Very, very wonderful. But it was like everything Prabhupada did was like a graceful dance. It was amazing to watch him pick his teeth. Was a beautiful, like a choreographed dance. It was everything he did was like that. His tilak was always absolutely perfect. Like Hari Bhakti's. Hari Bhakti always has a wonderful tilak.
And he doesn't sweat. Another thing was that a face who had a tilak is like a crematory. So that was first. The simple thing for men was long hairs. Long hairs were wonderful thing Reg Kishore mentioned this morning that I honestly did not know was that women should keep their breasts covered with three layers of cloth. And when you think about when you wear a sari over your head, you got the blouse on, the underclothes, and then one coming up here and one going down here. So it's interesting that it's covered, even if it's Gujarati style, Bengali style, whatever. That's an interesting concept. And the whole midriff concept was just totally unknown until Bollywood came and said, doesn't this look good? Fashion. And everybody has stripped down to naked from here to here. That was not there. But the idea of sika also, certain size, what, 1.5-inch across, any more, a wider sika was another sampradaya. So he gave a little bit of instruction, but the idea was that there's beauty in Vaishnava dress and people will look, oh, those are the Hare Krishna. So he mentioned it was like a policeman wearing a uniform when you see the blue, you know, and the stars and the star, the sheriff or whatever, you know, that's the law. So this was our dress to be immediately seen. And then next to that went behavior. And you know, there's so many little tiny instances of Prabhupada giving, you know, little tiny instructions that might not seem important to you. But when he left my husband and I in Vrindavan, I was the first white woman to live in Vrindavan in the 70s. It was known amongst the whole village that this white lady with these white men. part of the Bhakti Vedanta camp. So there was a very big focus to watch this mighty woman. So Srila Prabhupada said to my husband and I, he said, so you're being watched, you're being observed. He said, you tried very hard to follow the etiquette of Vrindavan. Not etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, but etiquette of Vrindavan. Why? Listen to this. If you want to have a little bit of heaviness in your head. You will not be criticized. I will be criticized. You will not be criticized. I will be criticized. My God. I want to help me, Lord, help me, Lord. And so it was so profound at that time that there was one very wealthy man from Delhi, from the Dalmia family. They were big industrialists and owned many, many companies. And they had a lot of land in Vrindavan. When we moved to Vrindavan, you've seen in Yadavara's films, that surrounding Raman Riti was nothing but forest. There was nothing but forest and goodness. Dacoits that were out there, a few houses, like hardly any development. And what was the price of land? How much was an acre of land when we moved there? Yes.
$50.
5 rupees.
Five rupees?
5 rupees for 1 acre of land in 1970. Now it's a good $100,000. At least. Wow. So it was a very different place, Vrindavan. But, for example, Prabhupada said that even how you drink water in Vrindavan, because we had these clay pots, round clay pots, little neck, and then a ladle. And you went down, you get the ladle, where you keep the ladle when it's not in a pot. The ladle doesn't touch your body, it doesn't touch your mouth. Doesn't touch cups. If we drank water improperly, who would be criticized?
I would be criticized.
So there was a great stress to do what you're talking about, to learn about it, to learn how, especially our Guru Maharaj will not be criticized by our behavior. So that's one good reason to learn etiquette, is to honor your spiritual master, the greatness of your spiritual master. You want to pay back your spiritual master.
And we want to touch on, too, the idea of balance. That if I gave you a copy of the Hari Bhakti Vilas right now and you read it, you would probably be overwhelmed and say, there's no possible way I could do one one-hundredth of what's in Hari Bhakti Vilas. I mean, there's rules for everything, you know, how you sit in front of the deity, you can't burp, you can't pass air, you can't put your feet in front of the deity, you can't pick up in front of the deity. I mean, there are rules for every single thing. And in India, because of the caste system, they had developed these obscure and strange rules having to do with the so-called culture of what was in India at the time. So we have the example of Subhuti Roy, contemporary of the Six Goswami. When Hussein Khan, his wife, saw a scar on the back of Hussein Khan one time, and he was the Shah, he was in charge of Bengal. She said, how did you get that scar? And he said, when I was young, I was a servant of Subhuti Roy, and I was building a lake, and he thought I was remiss, and he beat me. And she said, then you have to kill him. You have to find him, and you have to kill him immediately. And he said, no, actually, he was my benefactor. He punished me for my own good. No, I have nothing against him. He's my benefactor. So she kept on him and on him and on him. Every time she saw that scar, she was furious. She was just furious. So finally, she said, I'm going to commit suicide if you don't kill him. And so he said, all right, I won't kill him, but I'll take away his caste. And so all you had to do at that time to take away the caste and all the privileges that came from the caste was take a little water from a Muslim drinking cup, a little bit of water, and sprinkle it on and finish. Finish.
So there's so many things to think of.
Yeah, exactly. Finished, that was it. So he lost his caste.
So he went to the Brahmin community. He said, "What should I do now?" And they said, "Well, your life is finished. You may as well drink, hot ghee to kill yourself." And so finally, some other wonderful soul said, "No, don't do that. Go to Vrindavan and serve the Vaishnavas." And so by his grace, Subhuti Roy went to Vrindavan, and he took a job of going into the forest and collecting twigs. And he took the twigs and sold them as bunches, and he got 6 annas for every certain amount that he sold. Then he would take 1 anna of that 6 annas, and he would buy a chickpea kind of dish and make chickpeas, dried chickpeas, and that was what he ate. And the other 5 annas he saved so that when Bengali Vaishnavas came to Vrindavan, he could serve them rice, hot rice, because the Bengalis are raised on rice. So they go into, they're arriving in Vrindavan, and what do the Vrindavan Brajvasis eat? They eat those heavy wheat rotis. And so the Bengalis couldn't digest because of eating it. So his rest of his life, he served the Vaishnavas in this way. But just see how easily, because of the rules, the heavy rules, his caste was taken away. So this was the point I was trying to make at the very beginning. There has to be a balance. And that's why you have to invest in what etiquette you follow. You have to personally invest in that. Otherwise, it will become just rules to you, and you will lose your taste and not want to follow them. After a while, you say, "Why am I following these stupid rules?" You know. But if you invest yourself in them, if it comes from your heart and through the strength of your chanting and your service to others, then you'll want to do it as an ornament, the ornament of a Vaishnava. And that's the principle. It has to be balanced there.
Telegram the list, then it goes back to this belief business. If we hear properly, if we chant it, then we'll get the belief that this is valuable. And I want it. I want more of it. And when we have that, then the whole purport of etiquette will come slowly into focus and actually become brilliant and illuminating and valuable to us. Mm-hmm. So we're all coming from different places, aren't we, in this room? Mm-hmm. Different births, different cultures, different parental training, different educations, different influences, different spouses, family members, and all that affects our beliefs, doesn't it? So when we come to Krishna consciousness, what we're not doing is accepting a new set of beliefs. We're accepting what's called Sanatana Dharma. It's called an eternal truths. But to access those truths, we want to increase the quality of our belief system, to put our hearts, minds, and senses into things that really benefit us, that take us to the destination that we want to go to. Mm-hmm. So it's really, and we're so happy, I'm very happy to hear the quality of your statements have all been very powerful. Hari Lewis was very nice that through the 9 processes of devotional service, this is really the road to getting into the importance of these belief systems, of which the first is
Shravana, hearing.
The next, Smarana. These 3 things Prabhupada said once to me, you cannot remember until you hear chant. Comes next. Just like in Bhagavatam class, we were talking about earth this morning, that earth is all part of the 5 elements that are in front of it, and how sky has 1 and water has 1 and such and such on down, there are 5 in earth. Well, that's like the cumulative increasing qualities that are in the 9 processes of devotional service. Mm-hmm. So it's so important that we relish the first is hearing, and if we hear nicely and we chant nicely, oh my goodness, how nice it would be to remember nicely. This morning when I heard that text, I thought, oh, I wish I could just print that on my forehead and have access to it all the time. Be able to remember it. It's so beautiful.
Is there a question?
Okay, so yeah, let's open it up to you guys.
Thank you.
questions?
What are some things that we incurred myths in big discussions?
Everyone made a word or two or three statements of what they wanted to, what defined etiquette, or what they saw in etiquette or wanted from etiquette. So do you have, you can answer those questions.
What do you think etiquette is, yeah, first of all? What does etiquette mean to you?
Just a way of life, respect, manners.
Respect, that's a good way of saying it.
Huge part of etiquette is respect. Is understanding that Krishna is the focus of all etiquette.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
All etiquette is only for pleasing Krishna.
Wow.
And all etiquette allows us to please Krishna rather than our senses. Mm. So that's why it's important. Mm-hmm. But in the very beginning, especially if it's given to us from someone in the modes of passion or ignorance, not very appealing at all. Mm-hmm. Etiquette sits in goodness. And from goodness we go to pure goodness. Mm-hmm. So when somebody who loves you gives you an instruction, you can hear it much, much better than somebody who's in passion and just spits it out to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go back to the principles. Let's take the principle of dress. So why do I want to dress nicely? Well, first of all, because to please Krishna. Because Krishna is pleased if I'm neat and clean and stand before him to offer some service or some prayer. Secondly, because then others identify me by my dress. Yeah. Am I peed off in my dress? Here is a Vaishnava. Like so they serve different purposes, but it's ultimately all for pleasing Krishna. Everything that we do, every etiquette that we perform is for pleasing Krishna.
I was thinking one thing that you have, like your speech is so sweet, and people's comments are so sweet. So the etiquette of speech, you know, the words we use, how we use them, where they come from, whether they come from a foundation of Vaishnava etiquette, whether they come from anger within ourselves, whether they come from the modes. This, like, you could do a thing on etiquette, and you could sit there and say, okay, you must do this, this, and this. That your words are very sweet because you're saying, okay, pick something and see what from within yourself you can do. And the etiquette of speech is something that I've been really thinking about a lot in the last 6 months.
Interesting.
Of just, you know, how we actually speak to each other, how we speak of each other, how we even speak with Krishna or the deities. Mm-hmm. Like when you're singing, this is also your speech in the form of song, like the Bhagavatam is sung, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're chanting also, where does that speech, you know, that singing come from? Does it come from our thoughts of Krishna? So anyway, somehow the etiquette of speech is really something that I've really been thinking about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never an end to wanting to relish that and go deeper. The pages of the CC are just dripping with the nectar of exchanges of speech, of love. These are just like the sweetest kind of sweet nectar there is, are these exchanges in CC from true love and respect. There's real, genuine respect. Respect is so exciting, actually.
Wow.
Oh, what a fun thing, respect is.
And also, even sometimes Srila Prabhupada, like you were saying, when he told you they won't criticize you, they'll look at me. So Srila Prabhupada would never say these things from his own internal, a bad mood, a good mood or something. Sometimes he could be very pointed with the devotees, but they always came from a place of how to serve Krishna better.
We were discussing actually that this morning in relation to chastisement and discipline, and on an adult level, that many of Prabhupada's disciples and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, they relished his chastisement more than his praise, because they felt that if he chastised them, that meant he cared. Otherwise, he wouldn't bother. And it's interesting, you see it in training, that if you go to India today, it's something you hardly, rarely see here anymore in the West. In my generation, children were regularly physically disciplined. If you go to India today, it's normal for a parent to slap a child and, you know, not. But it's done in such a way that the children know it's done out of love. There's something inherent in them that they know. But the parents, from the very beginning, if Vaishnava walks in the room, they'll take the child and put him down, offer obeisances immediately, you know, push him down, you know. I mean, this is a regular thing. So all children know, you know, by the time they're, not all, but many of them know by the time they're 3 or 4, they can sit in front and they know how to offer obeisances. And they're expected to behave in a certain way. It's very, very different there. But because it's done out of love, the children somehow know that and they don't resent it. Whereas when I grew up, I got the same kind of treatment, kind of, you know, but in a material way. But I didn't feel that it was done out of love. And therefore, I resented it. You know? So much is how you do something. How do you approach these things? And the same is true of an etiquette. There must be, yes, we have a duty, we have to perform in a certain way. We have a duty to receive properly Vaishnavas, we have a duty in how we serve prasadam, how we take prasadam, all of these things. But there has to, we have to develop feeling behind it, that feeling that, otherwise it will become redundant to us at some point.
I had a personal experience with a devotee named Kratu. And when he was in Vancouver, and when Dayal was young, sometimes he would get into mischief. And one time he was doing something, and I chastised him, and then he left the room, and I burst out laughing. Because actually it was very funny, but it also could be dangerous or whatever. And Kratu said to me, "That is good." He said, "Chastising that comes from the desire to either save the child from harm or to, you know, instruct or to give them like this etiquette is very good. Chastisement that comes because you're tired, you're angry, you're frustrated, you're out of sorts. This is not good chastisement." And I think that's what you're saying. I saw that from his the Vaishnava people in India.
The more there's purity also, the more the person knows how to instruct. But Prabhupada didn't chastise all of the students. I was married to somebody for many years in Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada was very strict with me and extremely lenient with my husband. Extremely. He would never do things to Gurudas that he would do to me. Very strict. So that was an interesting experience. Because he's the kind of the other way around, but the husband is, the wife kind of gets behind that, you know, the court top. See, the husband, come at you out here.
He had so much affection for you that he chastised you for somebody else's fault.
No, I can remember, like in cleaning, we all know that cleaning is a part of cleaning, extremely emotional, so important. And Prabhupada was so strict with me about cleaning. I mean, to the point of you know, the tip of dirt on the end of your pinky finger. Mm-hmm. It was just like very, very strict. There was one instance where, you know, the cooker that's in our temple, the three-tier cooker? So that was Prabhupada's original cooker that he cooked on when he came to New York in 1966. And then it was passed down, and when he left the planet, it was sent to me for my care for some years. At any rate, it was in Vrindavan. This was 1973. Prabhupada came in and out of Vrindavan many times to check on the construction of the Krishna Balaram temple. And so there was this one time, it was right around the spring of 74. That was the first year of the Gaur Purnima festival in Mayapur. Then they came to Vrindavan. So we had no facility on the land, so we rented this place called Vogel Ashram. And your mother and father came very sick with Shakya. Anyway, so I gave the cooking over to someone who really wanted to cook for Prabhupada, and I was in charge of all the devotees, prasad, bhogavasa. So Prabhupada called for me several times, and I was working more or less 24/7 on this prasad business with these people that didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Hindi, and it was all just so hard to do. So anyway, finally I came to see Srila Prabhupada. And as I was coming, as part of the pastime, behind Srila Prabhupada there were those round bolster cushions, and we had made little saffron coverings for those. And I watched this lady take Prabhupada's cooker, the bottom of it was covered with black smoke from the coal fire. It hadn't been cleaned. Part of cooking for Prabhupada meant that after you cooked for him, you took the ashes and the sand of Vrindavan, or a coconut husk, and you cleaned it until it shined like gold. There was never to be one black spot on the bottom of Prabhupada's pots. What did he say if there was a black spot on the bottom of any cooking pot of your kitchen?
Bring me.
He said
square.
That it was fifth class, and that it was, you might as well be in a Muslim kitchen, which meant you didn't eat. I was like, he was the worst thing to have a black spot. So what does this poor girl have the good fortune of doing? At the moment that I come in, Prabhupada's coming in from another door, and she first takes Prabhupada's silk clothes and stuffs them in the pillowcase, and right on top of it, the black pot. Mm. I looked at her. If so, I will not be leaving Vrindavan tomorrow. I'm going to stay here, and you, by cooking for me tomorrow, Yamuna, it's just like a lump in my throat. Because he didn't chastise her, he didn't say a word to her. But I knew. He actually canceled his trip the next day, because I hadn't invited her in a way that she could hear the statement. So he stayed and cooked the next day, cleaned his pots, cheese pots, held it out and cooked for a time. So, yeah, so the spiritual master doesn't instruct everybody the same way. We can only instruct each other really according to how much we want to hear, isn't it? The more you want to know these things, the more it'll come to you. Isn't that the magic of Krishna consciousness? If we really want something in Krishna consciousness, the Lord hears that. And he sends us the right sangha. But we have to want it. We have to want it. So as you take a step toward Krishna, it takes so many to achieve. So that's also accessing etiquette, and the beauty of etiquette comes like that too. So I don't think you said yours, it's Kurt's book is. Or Marshall, you spoke yours?
No, Kurt's book, Respect.
Okay. Respect, oh, he said one more.
Well, I guess I'm not too sure about what the definition of etiquette is. Mm-hmm.
Can I read it again?
I have another one that I got from a dictionary. Etiquette is conduct or a procedure that is observed in Vaishnava life. It wasn't Vaishnava,
conduct
or a procedure. It means behavior or certain kinds of, for example, when you grew up, your mother or father might have, if you had a formal dinner, you might have been given instruction how to eat that dinner, or how to drink your drinks, or how not to beat from a baby to throw your food around the walls, to actually eat. So, for example, Hari Leela grew up in England, and England, even if you were born in America or England, you might have had different instruction on how to sit down at a formal dinner table.
My mother used to have a ruler on the table.
A ruler?
I don't remember it, but she told me that.
We sat down.
A ruler, and she said, the ruler?
If you didn't like, sit up, right, you put your elbows on the table, if you didn't cut it.
You get a tap?
Yeah, or the table would.
You ring the bell or something?
We actually went to some programs in England where you would sit at the table and there would be like five forks on one side and six spoons on the other side, and they're all for some specific purpose. And if you use the wrong spoon or the wrong fork, you're looked down upon. Yeah. That's the etiquette.
That's
the
etiquette. And in every decade, practically, there's different people who write books on etiquette. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of history, again, coming from the Six Goswamis the last several hundred years. And each one, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when you read his Svalakita Jivani, don't you get so much in terms of etiquette? Mm-hmm. We learned so much from that, of what his family was like, having 500 servants. What about when he went to school at 3 and he was a nasty teacher? You know, and he had to survive that. So many teachers were really mean. And there's just so much knowledge that we have to draw from.
Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
That was such a beautiful story that you mentioned of Shilpa's mother.
Yes.
I thought maybe if anyone doesn't know that story, it'd be nice to relay.
Yeah. He told me that was really interesting. Oh, but Perry rarely spoke about his childhood. I mean, but one day it was a John Lennon's. And he told that story, and he told this story He said when they traveled in Bengal, they traveled on bullock carts. And he said the bulls were not the kind of bulls that we see now. They were running bulls. Large, very, very large bulls. And he said they could run as fast as horses, those carts. So they had big wheels, especially designed for these running acts. And he said that his family, his paternal uncle, was a Rambhakta family. And so he said they would all pile in the bullock cart and go very, very fast. And one time, when they were going really fast, one of the wheels hit a very large stone on the road, and it took the baby, which I presume it was probably under a year old, and just jettisoned him out of the cart, and he flew out of the cart. God, they thought I was going to die, you know, immediately. And Prabhupada said, by the arrangement of Krishna, I landed in a big pile of straw and sunk down into the straw and wasn't hurt, and not a scratch on it. And so they were all thinking, so really special. And because of that, he told that story. And then he told another beautiful story about going to a program. And he said all the way that he can remember in the bullock cart they chanted. So who's ever been, it's really fun to ride in a bullock cart. I don't know if you had a chance to do it, but the sound of the hoofs, the smell of the animals, the whole measure of everything of it is wonderful. Anyway, he chanted, then they went to a program and he said there was Ram Katha. And then there was Ram Prasad. And then on the ride home, there was more Ram Kirtan. So naturally what happened at night, Ram dreams. And he told those three stories, and I was just like hanging on every word. Mm-hmm. And I said, I wish you'd tell more of those stories, Sri Prabhupada. And he said, at another time, I may do so. But he never did. He told me those three stories in one day.
He told other stories.
To some other devotees, yeah.
Any more? I think we'll stop there then.
Well, could we go to the point of maybe asking Carly, just this was such an interesting topic, that you may want to visit it again and again with the points that people brought up for maybe a year or so, and see at the end of the next year how people's concepts of etiquette change, and for them to be able to focus on ones that they would like to work on. For the empowerment of Sharanagati, first for our own empowerment, And then for the quality of Sangha in this valley, that if we want to have better communication, if we want to have, if we want to show better respect mm-hmm. to guests and Vaishnavas or whatever we really want to do, to see how it improves all through the school.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to just do a little recap for people that came late?
We've had so many places. I don't know.
But we'd like to try to
try
to.
We did a little bit. We did a little bit already. Okay. Yeah, with Winfert and.
Who would like to do that for Karin?
That's okay. He has a recording.
Oh dear. Oh. Let's just break that.
Anyway, it's been wonderful just sitting here, and I can't tell you what joy it gives my heart that you want to learn these things. That you want to grow in developing these wonderful qualities of Vaishnava and preserve what we've been given, which is such a valuable thing, and really special and wonderful.
I can also say that it'll make you happier. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants happiness in their life mm-hmm. and peace. And the more we access etiquette, I think the more peace of mind we have. Because it's such a reward in it. So rewarding, it's so reciprocal and empowering. Mm-hmm. And it gives us a feel of security, mm-hmm. safety, all kinds of wonderful connections, especially mm-hmm. with great saintly souls or more advanced devotees.
I'm not sure if you addressed this in the beginning. You mentioned how, with the story of Prabhupada's mother, mm-hmm. how at the time when you want to improve yourself and make yourself a better devotee, mm-hmm. You'll naturally start mm-hmm. searching out these mm-hmm. proper behaviors. Mm-hmm. And to what degree should we pursue these separately then, the mm-hmm. acquisition of knowledge of Vaishnava etiquette?
Absolutely. It has to, and we've talked about balance, but balance doesn't mean you wait until sometime in the future to practice Vaishnava etiquette until you do have a taste. We certainly don't want to convey that, but there has to be a balance. It has to be, you have to invest yourself in the learning and development of Vaishnava etiquette, and that means that there has to be some feeling behind it. Mm. And initially there probably won't be that much, but that's where duty comes in. Mm. It's just like when Prabhupada told us about, someone said, I don't have any taste for chanting, and what should I do? And Prabhupada said, chant, still chant. And sometimes it may be out of duty, and sometimes it may be out of the joy of chanting, but by the chanting itself will be not only purified, but you will then get more strength to want to go deeper into the chanting. So Vaishnava etiquette is like that. You sometimes do it out of duty, sometimes there's more feeling behind it, but ultimately it's that it's a progression of the development of the ornament of what it means to be a Vaishnava. Mm-hmm.
A really nice aspect. Aspect of etiquette is also the three different ways to deal with juniors and equals and superiors. Mm-hmm. That's really some really nice thing. Mm-hmm. And like Sri Prabhupada's mother, that austerity she did of eating with her left hand was out of compassion for her mm-hmm. dependents. That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is there an etiquette for kirtan and bhajan? Like,
there's a lot of etiquette.
There's a lot, and there's what Prabhupada gave us over the years. I believe it was last summer that Matahari came, and he had just a little tiny slice of it when the bus party came. Mm-hmm. Remember that in the temple? Mm-hmm. And he talked about hearing, and quoted Prabhupada, some of Prabhupada's instructions. Mm-hmm. And he wrote me before that, and we had this wonderful email exchange about that. And then there's from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wonderful instructions about kirtan. So yes, there is. In practically everything there's instruction.
Mm-hmm. But I think this is a good example to use about the idea of balance, because at the beginning stage, we're young, we're trying to increase our taste for the chanting. So, for instance, like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, Bhakti Thakur, in the kirtans in his temple, no harmoniums were played, you know, no unusual instruments were played. Yeah. But then Jamuna gives the example that in San Francisco, they were playing the insides of pianos and flutes and
every instrument anybody wanted to bring.
And anything, because Prabhupada wanted to have us increase our taste for chanting. Mm-hmm. So again, we don't necessarily want to use timpanis in the kirtan that we offer Krishna, but there has to be a balance until the point comes where the new devotee understands that, then we want to just increase the taste for Krishna consciousness. So there are so many rules for kirtan that you might find discouraging. Mm-hmm. But the one rule that's the most important, and we've talked about this a lot, is what? Mm-hmm. One rule.
Mm-hmm.
Chant for Krishna.
For Krishna.
Yeah.
For
Krishna.
Not
you
for...
that through Kars mm-hmm. Association. Yeah. He's been such a good example mm-hmm. for you. That the kirtans that you have with mm-hmm. your teacher, mm-hmm. he's giving you, he's praying for Krishna. Mm-hmm. You're not have a nice place, so I think I'm going to leave today. Mm-hmm. It isn't far.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just to glorify Krishna and, mm-hmm. and to allow others. And if you notice that the kirtans, it's Hari Bhakti's drum is way in the background. Mm-hmm. And our Kars harmonium is way in the background. Mm-hmm. And your kartals are way in the background. Only it's the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the meditation on the prayer that comes out mm-hmm. in those kind of kirtans. And then sometimes you can let loose and go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But then it pulls back to meditation mm-hmm. on the holy name. That's a fun one.
I don't know if you address this. Is there a distinction between what we can perceive as Indian culture etiquette, Indian etiquette, and Vaishnava etiquette, or at least as of now?
In regard to what?
I don't know, sometimes this has been brought up in ISKCON temples that we don't necessarily need to mimic the Indian culture and mm-hmm. way of life, mm-hmm. and the Vaishnava culture mm-hmm. is different. Is it that different for practical purposes? Or?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
What is important is to follow the Acharya. That's what's important, is to follow the essence of the spirit of the Acharya. And that's very hard to do in Kali Yuga. It's not an easy thing to do. Because so many of us understand it differently. We hear the same thing, but we understand it differently. So that's not easy to do. But yes, there is a beauty of the being born in India is a higher birth. It's a more pious birth. And just you come to understand that
mm-hmm.
for even a little bit of culture that's remaining, because in your lifetime you're going to see India's changing at warp speed from, you know, 40 years ago. It's just a different place. But yes, still, there are some of a certain generation that were trained in classical ways. When I went to India, it was three different parts of Indian culture. 1 to 20, or 25, 25 to 50, and 50 to 75. And the 50 to 75 lived in the old world.
Mm-hmm.
Did everything in the old world. The 1 to 25 were MTV people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just Star TV and MTV influenced them profoundly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 25 to 50, their parents were caught in the middle of their parents' world and their kids' world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 40 years ago, what to speak of now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the example that's given in India now can be beneficial and also can be remote.
That's the problem, is that it's changing so
yeah.
much. Mm-hmm. Even Time Magazine did a cover that was really, really amazing, showing a mother and a daughter. And the mother is wearing the traditional sari and the mark, and you know, she looks very, very paka, very chaste. And the daughter is wearing a top to bottom black leather bodysuit. You know, and
spiked hair.
And spiked hair and the whole thing. And
black
it was
collar.
Just showing that in the article, it was saying that the culture has changed so much that, I mean, for hundreds of years, women wore saris, you know, that just their natural dress, the, what they call the Indian dress. But yeah, it's changed so much that it's really hard to understand what is etiquette that's from the culture and what is the proper Vaishnava. Like this morning, Srivas was telling us the etiquette in the Gaudiya Math temple that he grew up in. So many rules. I mean, rules for everything. I mean, you would be amazed at from beginning to end, there was just everything. Even to the point that if you see his bead bag, it's high up on the chest. Because someone sat him down and told him that he shouldn't wear it down here. You know, so
not below the navel.
Not below the navel. So there are all these rules, and again, as I said, you'll get more and more into those. But you know, at some point, we would never say, okay, now wear your bead bags up here, because at our point, it might be just a rule too much. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you may want to say, oh, I really like that idea. That's one of the prerogative etiquettes. There's some that you must do, and then some that you can do, that you can incorporate into your life as you grow on.
I was thinking of one Indian Vaishnava etiquette. When I remember your story of your friends who were very wealthy who had the wedding, that somebody comes to your door and they serve in prasadam, and their children are trained. Mm-hmm. Like children are trained to just serve your guests, to open a prasadam, to wash their feet, to take the food. Like they don't have any other concept. They're there just to serve
I remember that when I went to that wedding. It's very interesting because it actually was the next year that I walked into the same house. Now this is a mansion. These are very, very wealthy Indians, but they're wonderful devotees as well. So the little grandson is named Radhanath. And Radhanath was 3 years old at that time, just before 3 years old. So many devotees were coming to the house. And when I walked in the door, Radhanath was standing there with folded hands, this little boy, by himself, no parents are around. He's by himself, and he takes my hand when I walk in the door, and he said, now I'm going to take you into the temple room and show you the deities. Mm-hmm. And so he brings me into the temple room. He bows down, he gets up, and he said, and there's this whole line of deities there, because it's the parents' deities and the grandparents' deities and everything. And then there's pictures of the ancestors over on one side. He said, this is Radha, and this is Krishna, and this is Jagannath. And he goes on down the line, and then he gets to the end where all the other pictures are, and he said, and I don't know who those are. And then he took me back with a hand into that, and he stood waiting at the door for the next person, you know. And I thought, this boy is 3 years old, and he's been trained, you know, that this is how you receive guests. You know, it's amazing to see.
And his mother, his mother's the best female drummer in Chakotin, which is a pretty big thing. He got from the womb or something, as a really big allowed to drum. And so there was the kirtan, a few hundred people. Remember that little boy with the drum?
Yeah.
Barely gave his arms around the side. Yeah. And he was closing his eyes, and I mean, he was focusing. He was focusing, and he had the beat. He had the beat, he didn't have the moves and the transitions, but he was just like really in the zone to hear kirtan. Kind of impressed, very impressed.
Very interesting.
Fun. Yeah. So, yeah, sometimes you can get stuff, good stuff from India, and sometimes it's a little
bit. It seems we follow, I know from the Gaudiya Math, we try to stay loyal to Sri Sanatana Goswami's Haribhakti Vilas, because there'll be things that the Brahmins follow in India. For example, any sort of eclipse, a lunar or solar eclipse, they will close the deities, right? And they will close everything off, and basically go inside their houses and wait till it's over and go bathe in the river. But whereas in the Gaudiya Math, we would open the deities wide and have a roaring kirtan for the whole duration of the eclipse.
Yeah.
So there's differences like that.
Yeah. that's the essential point that you're doing again, is that we're trying to follow what's been passed down to us trying to preserve as much as we can so that it can be passed on in its purest state. Probably used to give the example of a mango, that the mangoes, they're considered the king of fruits. And if you can go up a mango tree and take a mango and drop it, then you have one kind of mango, because it bruises very easily. As soon as it hits the ground, it's bruised and it's affected. But they send us a group of men up the tree, one under the other, and they take the mango and pass it to the next, who passes the next. By the time it gets to the ground, it's in its pure, pristine state. So that's what we have that hope and desire, that what's been so lovingly and carefully passed down to us, that we try to preserve it and pass it down.
How can we remain inspired to follow etiquette during the course of our lives, especially when the opposite of etiquette, the byproducts of intense materialism and material nature, oftentimes seem so much more attractive?
Association. You need to always try to keep yourself with someone who's in the fire of Christian consciousness. And that gives you strength, doesn't it? When you're with someone who's enjoying kirtan, who's absorbed in the kirtan, doesn't that give you strength?
One of the rare occasions I was giving a class, we were talking about qualities of a devotee. Mm-hmm. And one devotee asked, how can we possibly hope to know those qualities or follow those qualities? And I said, well, you just have to look at your partner. Mm-hmm. If you're ever in doubt, or if you don't know anything, then you look at how Srila Prabhupada behaved, because he was all those qualities. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to look, you don't have to wonder, you don't
and
have
feel
to,
lonely.
You just look and you see how Srila Prabhupada behaved, and it's all there. Mm-hmm.
So getting access to it, sometimes it's important to try to find a live source so that you can have an interaction for it. For example, a lot of devotees never really got that the joy of the chastisement, and they still don't even see Prabhupada, that was negative. They just think, it's going to encourage me. But one thing about a live personality is that it's so much wonderful to be able to ask questions about what's important in etiquette. Where am I at? What do I need to focus on? Mm-hmm. I can't follow 64 rules and regulations to be a pujari. What do I do? Mm-hmm. So again, Prabhupada's example is right, though, Harilila, that if you follow the history of ISKCON and how he introduced deity worship in ISKCON, mm-hmm. and how by the time he left the planet where it was at, we get a whole journey of examples that we can slide into.
And the concept of somebody there is good because there's somebody to challenge you.
Yeah. Or to help you.
Sometimes
help you.
To help.
Help you.
Yeah.
So it's so good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hari, Hari, Bol.
Together, if you want to sing Sari Rappers, and then we'll have Prashad.
Oh, my God.
Who wants to leave?
Sahiba Vijayala Jodhaniya Jaika Jiye Vare Ishaya Sabare Dharma Jaya Shivaya Ti Loha Maya Sadurma Ti Tare Dharotina Samsare Krishna Maya Jai 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 say one more thing. Right there is Vaishnava etiquette. Because how many times, it's just something that's a step in the way of being. Or it's a prayer that you say slowly, lovingly, and with meaning. And that's actually a lot to do with you.
You know, when in Italy there are these wonderful series of prayers. And I tell you, Kaya's rendition of these Severa prayers are so good. I mean, when they're neat, didn't you just love them? And even when there's a description of all the dishes that were served, it was like one of the most nectar parts of everything so good about this Italian prayer. Don't you love those prayers, the Prashadam prayers?
Yes.
It's like, it kind of comes up with these melodies that just
perfect.
Bring them to life.
Hare Krishna. So nice to see you again. Yeah. Thank you. Are we going somewhere else?
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I'm going to the
kitchen.
Yeah,
good. I thought she had the diary.
Just,
that was good.
Oh, no, I love you. Love you so much, you girls. Can you
if your parents don't teach you, then it's hard for somebody else to do. But this is a safe place to do it, the school, because it's a place of learning. So you can access a lot here. And my gosh, if you can pass on to the next generation what probably gave us, then that'll be a wonderful thing. Because that we're not finding so much
stress on.
You know that. I mean, you've got to, if you open your eyes,
of course,
on it, you know, out there. So that's a very exciting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Okay. Hare Krishna. I'll go check my guy.
You want me to move on?